Welcome to Hype Episode 1. This is a brand new podcast on Hypeable. It is our flagship podcast, we're calling it. I'm Andrew Sims. I co-founded the Hypeable back a year or two ago. I'm sure if you've heard MuggleCast, you recognize this wonderful, sultry voice. We have some other hosts here. First of all, I'll introduce the other two people who are going to be on every episode of Hype with me. First of all, Selena. Hello, Selena.
Hi, everybody. Hello.
The beautiful female of the group.
I know. That's me. That's pretty much why I'm here.
Yeah, you bring the sex appeal to this show.
The feminism. I'm sure the listeners won't agree with you on that one.
And then there is Tariq Herzala. That's how you pronounce
hey
your
guys.
Last name, right?
There's the sex appeal.
Yeah. There's yeah. the sex appeal.
I mean, that was the really white way of saying it, but that works.
How do you say it?
I say Tariq Herzala as Herzala. Normal people can pronounce that. But if you want to be really technical about it, it's Tariq Herzala.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
I'm not sure if I can do that.
Yeah, I don't want to put that against any of the listeners. So.
Okay.
So Tariq it is.
Yes.
So it will be us three every episode. And then we're going to be mixing it up episode to episode. And today we have on Joshua Neely.
Hey guys.
One of Hypeable's shining stars, hailing from South Carolina.
North Carolina.
Oh,
good try.
So close.
Close.
And Josh leads our viral section, all the great original content that you see, and does some great graphics work. Really, Josh, you're one of my favorite people.
It's generally awesome.
I was hoping you would say, I'm one of your favorite. Whatever.
Oh, yeah. You were definitely one of my favorite people.
Maybe. Lovely.
So this show will always be made up of Hypeable hosts. I guess maybe we'll have a guest outside of the Hypeable world every once in a while. But the purpose of the show is, we have a lot of great shows on Hypeable. We have Glee Chat. We have Vampire Hype. We have Who Hype. You know, we have a lot of great shows, and a lot of them focus on television, but the purpose of this podcast will be to focus on everything. Books, film, books to film, a little bit of TV, some music, some video games. This is the flagship show of Hypeable. So what better word to call it than hype? That perfectly represents what this show is about.
Yeah, it's so lucky that you haven't used that for anything else before, Andrew.
Well, we have used hype.
Very unique.
We have used hype before. I show that I do right now, formerly called Hype, is now called Hype After Dark to differentiate the two. So this one is now Hype. That other one is Hype After Dark. I'll talk about that in the future. So we're really excited about this show because we want this to be the main show on Hypeable, and we'll, like I said, we're going to be getting other people in through who work on Hypeable, and we're really excited about it because we've felt for a long time that we need one flagship show, and this is going to be it. So welcome to Hype.
I'm particularly excited because that means that when there are hot guys outside of television or outside of Vampire Diaries, I can bring it up here. It's great.
Oh.
This is a forum for everything. In the description of the show, we do say that this is going to be the last word on entertainment, and we'd like to think so because I like to think all the podcasts that we've done here have going way back to MuggleCast. It's been relaxed, open conversation about fandom. If you go and you say you watch a television show about entertainment, or you watch a, I don't know, like I guess like Perez Hilton, they do video stuff, but it's also vapid, it's also empty, and just crap. So we're hoping to do something really good here that you can enjoy. That's thoughtful. That's not big-breasted blonde women giving you the entertainment news, even though
I'm on the wrong show.
Yeah, even though Josh would certainly appreciate that. But no, we're really excited about this. So
yeah,
no, it's good. Less gossip, you know, more news.
Exactly.
And I like how we start our first show by slagging off everybody else. It's good form.
Yeah.
We'll still be talking about Justin Bieber and Selena Gomez and all their problems. Don't you worry. But I think we know what our audience is looking for in terms of a general entertainment show. And honestly, we are going to be the first few episodes of the show, we're going to be doing this every other week, by the way, so it's going to be twice a month. This is going to be a learning process to see what people like, what they don't like in terms of content. So we hope you'll soldier through it with us as we discover, narrow in on exactly what we're trying to do here. So anyway, the first segment of this new show, Hype, is Hot on Hypeable. And if you go to Hypeable, as you do every day, hopefully, right up at the top you see Hot on Hypeable, and that shows the most viewed stories in the past 24 hours. So these are stories that we're going to be talking about that have been really popular on the site. On this episode, we're focusing on more recent stories, and the reason we have Josh on is because he knows movies very well and is also up on superheroes, which we aren't as much, I don't think. I don't know. Selena and Tariq,
not at
you
all.
Guys?
No. I haven't even seen Star Wars, so some of these topics are just going to be like, oh, okay.
Me neither.
Okay, I'm more than that, and that doesn't have superheroes. So
it's close.
They're basically the same thing to me. I put Star Wars and Star Trek in the same area.
Exactly. Blasphemy.
Whoa. I'm glad that you're here, Josh.
But first, actually, we're going to talk about Warm Bodies, because that just came out. That was a book-to-film adaptation. It was written by Isaac Marion, and it's been out for a couple years. Readers have loved it. It's a great zombie story. It just came out in theaters. It stars Nicholas Holt, Teresa Palmer, Rob Corddry in some of the lead roles. Selena, you just said you just saw it the other day. What did you think of it?
I did see it the other day, and I thought, actually, because I'd read the book, and unlike a lot of other people, I was not that much into the book. Like, I'm not a big zombie person, and I sort of thought it was a bit, But then I saw the film, and I thought it was really, really great, because it was not afraid to be silly. You know, it never took itself too seriously, and it was almost like you were sitting there cringing, but the movie wanted you to cringe. It was kind of like the ultimate deadpan humor, if you will. Yeah. Excuse the pun. But, you know, so I thought it was just a really enjoyable experience, even when it was lame. It was lame in a way that it was meant to be, and it actually told a really great story.
Yeah.
And I thought it was great, and it was great. The way they changed the ending from the book as well, I thought fit the movie really well.
So you didn't have a problem with that?
No, I thought it worked for the movie.
I haven't read the book, but I did hear after seeing the movie that it was changed. And yeah, it didn't seem to bother people. Tariq and Josh, have either of you seen it or read it?
I loved it. Yeah, it was great. I saw it when we had those Hypeable passes for early screenings.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought a friend of mine who wanted to see it, and we were both really excited, although we haven't read the book at all. Mm-hmm. But when we saw the movie, it made us really want to read the book, because it was perfect combination of just comedy, gore, and like romanticness. Like, I don't even know. It was just awesome.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it was an interesting take on zombies, you know, because we have like The Walking Dead right now and stuff like that. And it just seemed like having the love story within it. It was different. You know, it felt good.
Mm-hmm. It was like it
the
was
comedy
saying,
was neat.
Yeah, it was like we were saying, yeah, we know that zombies can be kind of silly, but
it's kind of a ludicrous notion, but it works. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just interesting.
It's averaging a 78% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is a good review, good overall review. I didn't think it would rank that high, actually.
I would imagine it'd be lower.
Now, when I saw it, I went to a screening. It was an early screening that Summit, the studio behind it, was hosting for the Twilight fans camped out at the Breaking Dawn Part 2 premiere. I went to that, and these girls behind me and my friends who run some Twilight sites ruined it for us, because I don't know if they were delusional after camping out for Breaking Dawn for multiple days or what, but they were behind us cackling at the movie the whole time, calling it corny and poorly written and just laughing at it. And we were getting fed up, because that's just rude to do in a movie theater, to talk through a movie, period. Or laugh at a movie. And it's also like, you got a lot of nerve to insult Warm Bodies when you're camping out for Breaking Dawn.
Yeah, it's so corny.
Aww. Maybe they felt threatened. But that's funny you say that, actually, because when I went to the cinema, there was a guy and a girl next to me, this couple, and the guy, before the movie started, he was, like, complaining. He was like, oh, you dragged me to see this chick flick, and, you know, it's, like, it's not even real zombies, and it's just going to be a love story. And then I heard him through the movie, sort of, his laughs became less derisive and more... Mm. Because he actually thought it was funny, and then by the end of it, he was like, "Oh my god, this was amazing! Thank you for taking me to see this." So
that's good to know, actually. So I mean, those people just behind me—it actually gave me the impression that this movie was going to get panned because these girls behind me just would not stop laughing at the movie, and that really ruined it for me.
They just didn't understand how brilliant, like how much of it was parodying itself, and that was what worked.
Right.
They just didn't get that, I think.
I think you had to have an open mind for that film. It felt like trying to take things seriously, it was impossible to take things seriously. Yeah. But that's what worked. You know, I think that's what worked well, was that, like you said, they were kind of making fun of themselves.
Yeah, I loved the fact that they made fun of themselves so much. And I really wanted to drag a friend over who basically just hates horror movies. And I have a feeling that she wouldn't be scared of this movie, but at the same time she was scared of Hocus Pocus when we tried to watch it. So
wow.
But I normally feel like this movie would be great for anyone. Even if you don't like a zombie movie, you'd really enjoy Warm Bodies.
Yeah. The movie has actually only made $28 million worldwide so far. It made $25 million in the United States. I don't think it was expected to pull in too much, but I guess it's a win for Summit if it did good in the reviews. That's kind of...
Yeah.
It's strange that they had so much advertising. I saw it everywhere, you know.
Yeah, they really did here in L.A.
They made a huge push.
Things. Yeah, well, they got a lot of Twilight money to spend on their films, even if they know it's not going to do so well.
Yeah.
But they also... Jonathan Levine, who directed it, also directed 50-50, which was also released by Summit.
Oh!
Yeah.
Which was also a really great movie.
That was.
So they have a nice little relationship, Jonathan Levine and Summit, right now. We'll see if they do anything else together in the future.
I thought it was an interesting choice for Nicholas Holt to do this, you know, while his career is kind of like shooting, you know, and it's just an interesting film for him to pick up.
We'll talk about some other movies coming up later in the show in another segment where we preview what's to come in the next 2 weeks, because we want to get you guys ready. In other news, Benedict Cumberbatch's character in Star Trek Into Darkness appears to have been revealed.
Possibly.
But, you know, the way the headline is written, it seems to be set in stone, which is probably why the article did so well. But anyway, there had been rumors about Benedict playing Khan in Star Trek Into Darkness, and it had been denied by Benedict himself and by J.J. Abrams. He was on video, Benedict, saying, oh no, I'm playing a character called...
John Harrison,
and it's this and that. So what happened here? Why does this seem to be a revelation? What was big about yesterday?
Well, it was just strange. You know, Entertainment Weekly was with the site that it was on, and they basically had interviews with everyone from the cast this past week. And they did. I think you posted the posters on the front page, and they had multiple pictures within the pages. And they ended up posting basically that it was Kirk and Khan on the main page, you know, and it was Benedict Cumberbatch and Chris Pine, and it was either a terrible flub by the editor or, you know, something slipped. And I just thought it was, I took a screenshot and thought it was just interesting that they'd make that mistake after dealing with them for literally the last 2 weeks, you know, exclusively.
Yeah.
Now, am I the only one who just thinks of Genghis Khan when I hear the word Khan? Because I'm just thinking of some Asian guy in Benedict Cumberbatch.
Or, you know, the tiger from Jungle Book?
Jungle Book, yeah.
That's what I thought.
Khan is from the 1982 Star Trek film called The Wrath of Khan. And he's just a fan favorite of the second series of Star Trek, which was, you know, kind of renewed after the early 60s. He was in an episode in the TV series in the late 60s. So then he kind of just came out of nowhere and all the fans really liked him. So I think it's more everyone's hoping it's him, but it still could be this random character that J.J. Abrams, the director, just made up.
Yeah.
I hope it's someone iconic. But I hope it's because it's Benedict Cumberbatch and he's such like hot stuff right now that I feel like a role like this would really suit him as opposed to a new villain.
I don't think EW was let in on the secret about Khan, but this is... It just seems so probable. I was talking to my friend the other day. It was a week ago, and we were at a bar, so I can't totally remember what he was saying. But he was so confident that Benedict was playing Khan because of some reasoning. He sounded pretty sure. He spewed some logic off to me, so I trust him. And all these little like minor leaks seem to be adding up to something, and it would be very in the style of J.J. Abrams and Benedict to be pulling a Stephen Moffat on us. Am I right, Doctor Who fans? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like these rumors keep cropping up. And I see the biggest diehard Star Trek fans like saying he's going to be Khan. You know what I mean? And I feel like just to please them, he's going, you know, J.J. Abrams is going to do it. Because it'll be interesting for them to say, no, 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 it's not him, it's not him. And then we go to the theater and see, oh, it's Khan. You know, I think that people will have a much better reaction if it is.
Fringe recently wrapped up its show, a long-running show on Fox. Lena covered
so sad.
It on Hypeable.
Yeah, I loved it. It was such a great show.
Was the finale good? Was it? Did he feel?
Yes,
satisfied?
It was amazing. It was one of the best series finale that I think any television show has done ever. And that's a lot to say. Because Celine, have you seen it yet?
No,
you haven't seen the finale yet.
No.
Who are you? What
I
happened?
Don't know. I don't want to watch it. I don't want it to end. It's terrible.
That's kind of sad.
But it's just, I know.
It's a really sweet episode, though, because like Charmed, I was a big fan of Charmed, and Charmed has one of the best series finales ever as well. It makes you smile at the very end. Like at the very last scene, all you're doing is smiling because of everything that they've been through and everything that they've done all season. It's great.
I'm just worried that they're all going to die, and I don't want that to happen. Don't tell me if it happens now, but that's just why.
Okay.
I just started putting it off, and then it just kept being put off.
Because I was smiling when they all died, clearly.
That's just how you are.
That's how I am with Downton Abbey right now, because it's not the series finale. This isn't the series finale coming up, but... Series 3 already aired in the UK, and I can buy it right now legally through iTunes, but I don't want to. I want to spread it out over the next three weeks during PBS's airings of it. So I can feel your pain, Selena.
What's so funny seeing the comments on about Downton Abbey. You know, it's like, oh, the UK viewers saw it. They're like, you're not going to believe what happened. And then everybody else is like, shit, what's going to happen here?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I already know the big spoiler coming up, which is really upsetting to me. Maybe that's the reason I'm not rushing, because I know what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, getting back to Fringe and John Noble, there was a rumor an Australian radio host claimed that she has it on really good authority that John Noble is circling becoming the villain in Star Wars Episode 7.
Yeah. I know. Wouldn't that
He'd
be awesome?
He'd be great. I mean, he's a great actor.
Would he?
And even if you haven't seen Fringe, if you've seen Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings.
He plays Denethor in the third movie and the second movie, actually.
Yeah, and he played a great villain.
He's amazing. He just plays such – he can play that twisted, dark, but layered character so incredibly well. I would not be surprised, especially because J.J. Abrams, of course, created Fringe.
He seems very theatrical, too.
Oh, okay.
Mm, so there's the Abrams connection there. That means that I think this is more plausible, even though it does seem like a really far-fetched rumor that someone could have easily made up.
Yeah, again, it was an Australian radio host just saying she had it on good authority, so this really can't... But, I mean, why would you say you have it on good authority if you... If you're...
So we'll talk about it.
Get people to listen to your show.
Yeah,
I mean,
probably.
We should say something we have on good authority right now, see what happens.
I have it on good authority. Dan Radcliffe is going to play young Luke Skywalker.
Oh my gosh.
In the standalone film.
Exclusive right there.
Exclusive.
Start spreading their rumors.
In related Star Wars news, actually, sorry, I didn't mean young Luke Skywalker. I meant young Han Solo. Because the Star Wars rumor this week is that there are going to be two – well, Disney confirmed there are going to be two Star Wars standalone films that are in development right now. The rumor is that they're going to one's going to focus on Boba Fett? How do you pronounce that? I've never seen it.
Boba Fett.
Yep.
Okay, that's more
fun. You really need to start watching some movies, Andrew.
I know. Someday. And then the other one is supposed to focus on a young Han Solo. And then there was another rumor – from Anna
about
Cool
Yoda,
News.
Correct?
About Yoda, yeah. Now, I think that would be the best first standalone pick, right?
Yeah, Yoda. Like, I don't even Yoda know Star Wars, and Yoda would be awesome. Sorry to interrupt, but I mean, as someone who doesn't know Star Wars at all, Yoda is the only person I know of.
Exactly.
He's green and adorable, and I think that he would make an awesome movie.
Right.
It's funny, actually, because, I mean, Han Solo seems like the obvious. One writes itself. Like, that's not even... that. Yeah, sure, they could do that, and they could make lots of money. But in terms of the Star Wars fan base, Boba Fett is extremely popular. He is like a fan favorite sort of fringe character that everybody loves to imagine. And we've seen some of his backstory as well in the prequels, because we followed his father and we saw him as a little boy, but there's a big hole of stuff we don't know about how he turned from the little boy we saw in the prequels to how he ended up in the original movies. So, I mean, I could see them doing something great with that, but it probably wouldn't have as much mainstream appeal as the other two.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Tariq on this. The Yoda, in terms of pop culture, he is the one that everybody knows and is most recognizable.
Han Solo, too, though.
Yeah, I think Han Solo probably...
And he'd be, like, more attractive, so they'd bring in more people for that.
Yeah, imagine if they picked a really great young lead for that role. That would be pretty monumental.
Yeah, because there's a lot of, like, younger male actors right now I feel like could play a Han Solo.
As long as they don't pick Alex Pettifer, then I'm cool with it.
Yeah, stop with the Alex Pettifer.
I don't know who I would pick.
Who would we pick to play Han Solo, a young Han Solo? Because in the films, you know, they just show, you know, him as he's like a late 20s type of person. So he'd be in his teens, early 20s.
So what picks do you have? Do you have any ideas, Josh?
Maybe. No, I was just seeing what you guys thought, because I hadn't really thought about who would play him. But it's just crazy to think about a young Han Solo.
Any picks? From anybody? See, I don't know the characters, so I can't really...
Yeah, same here. So Selena's really the only one who can answer that question.
I know, I'm like thinking so hard. I feel like the spotlight is on me right now. Like, I feel like we need to say someone really good.
Well,
how about someone like...
Well, here's an article from the Huffington Post. Maybe this will give you some inspiration. They picked out a list of 19 actors who could play young Han Solo. Sam Claflin... going to be Finnick in Catching Fire. Chase Crawford. Garrett
from Hedlund. Gossip Girl?
Yeah, I think so.
No.
Dane DeHaan. He was in Chronicle, and he's going to be in Kill Your Darlings with Dan Radcliffe.
How about someone like Jensen Ackles? I know that he's a CW actor, and in general, those are not taken seriously, but that's not his fault. And he's actually a really good actor. I think that would be my pick.
How about Eddie Redmayne?
No.
He's a little too serious, I think.
He's not Han Solo-ish enough, I don't think.
I think like Rupert Grant, you know, he's closer match.
No.
That's just how bad Eddie Redmayne is as a job, right?
He's not hot enough to be Han Solo.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I was just drinking my water. I needed to process that.
How about Shia LaBeouf?
Yeah. Well, actually,
he could actually pull it off. Yeah,
he played his son in the Indiana Jones.
Oh, you're right. He played Harrison Ford's son in Indiana Jones.
It'd be a beautiful symphony
in that awful
full circle moment
movie. Yeah. No, I think he could definitely do it.
Well, we'll have to see who what happens. I mean, it's still
there's
a
so
long
many.
Way
it
off,
feels
so.
Like. Yeah, it feels like there's so many young, you know, male actors right now that are kind of in all these, you know, like joining Hunger Games and joining all these franchises. I feel like they could pick, you know, there's a lot of great guys out there.
We actually have to be considering people who are like 17 right now, because by the time this Han Solo movie happens, it could be 5 years from now.
So Logan it could be Lerman.
He's too nice. A little bit of Oscar news. We have the Oscars coming up on February 24th. They're going to be broadcast on ABC. And the Academy Awards have been announcing new things about the show every single day. We know it's going to be hosted by Seth MacFarlane. We know Meryl Streep, Octavia Spencer, Christopher Plummer will be some of the presenters. Mark Wahlberg and Ted from his movie Ted as well. Barbra Streisand's going to be performing. Adele's going to be performing. Norah Jones will be performing. Hosted by Seth MacFarlane, I think I said that. And then they announced also this week that Dan Radcliffe, Charlize Theron, Channing Tatum, Joseph Gordon-Levitt will all be making special appearances, quote unquote.
Also, the Avengers.
What is it? Oh yeah,
multiple Avengers are going to be there.
They'll be presenting an award together. But
correct.
Dan Radcliffe, Charlize, is that how you pronounce her name?
Charlize Theron.
Channing Tatum, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. What does a special performance mean? Or special appearance mean? What is that? Like, what could Dan be doing specifically?
That is the most random group of, like, just people to bring together at once.
Well, we
like,
don't know.
Do they mean
they're
all going to do it once, or they're all just, like, coming on?
I don't think that's what that necessarily means.
Yeah. Sometimes they do that where they pull out a few, and then they pull out a few more, and they, you know, they just do these steps of introducing categories and whatnot.
Considering we've got Dan Radcliffe, big Broadway star, and Channing Tatum, big star of Magic Mike, maybe some kind of dance number, something.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is going to be a movie musicals tribute. So
there you go, then.
Maybe that's what it's a part of, but that movie musicals tribute is going to focus on Dreamgirls. Ooh, two others I'm forgetting right now. Dreamgirls.
And recently?
Oh, Les Mis.
Les Mis, yeah.
And then there's one other I'm forgetting. But point is...
Perfect.
Well, it's got like Barbra Streisand. So, I mean, that could be musical, really.
Yeah, so we'll see. I just thought that was interesting. That it's also going to be Dan Radcliffe and Joseph Gordon-Levitt's first appearances at the Oscars. So exciting.
Maybe they'll steal an award for Harry Potter this time.
They just steal one.
Yeah, just take
one. We deserved this last year. Give it to me. In some other news, Doctor Who's Matt Smith has landed a male lead in Ryan Gosling's directorial debut. Now, these two are beloved in pop culture, so what a great pairing. The film is called How to Catch a Monster. The story is set against the surreal dreamscape of a vanishing city and centered on a single mother of two being swept into a macabre and dark fantasy underworld while her teenage son discovers a secret road leading to an underwater town. And I guess...
Is Matt Smith the teenage son?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, but he doesn't look... He's kind
he's
of
not
aged.
A teenager.
He might be like the person that like the teenage son finds in the underwater world that like helps lead him through.
It would be like a bit labyrinthish, maybe.
That could work. That could work. Because it is a male lead, so it's got to be one of those two, I would think. But that's cool news, and I mean Matt Smith, he doesn't really appear in movies too often. He's pretty tied up with Doctor Who right now, and in terms of American audiences, that's definitely where they only see him is with Doctor Who on BBC America.
He did Clone, but that was pretty terrible.
Mm. We're talking about quality, and Ryan Gosling will bring a quality picture to for Matt Smith. Selena, you had a nice exclusive this past week.
I did.
Tell us about this interview.
The inner fangirl in me is still squeeing about this particular interview. I got to sit down for a phone interview with Alan Tudyk, who fans might remember from Firefly, Dollhouse. He's currently on The Purgatory, and he's going to be starring in the upcoming movie about baseball legend Jackie Robinson, 42. And I got to speak to him both about The Purgatory and 42 and Firefly as well, which was so exciting because Firefly, basically, it ended 10 years ago, but the fandom is still clamoring about it potentially eventually coming back whenever Joss Whedon and Nathan Fillion are available. And basically what Alan Tudyk said in the interview that we did, which was so much fun, by the way, it was so exciting. he basically said that it's still a possibility. Like, he really believes that at some point down the line, no matter how much time passes, Firefly could still be brought back as long as Joss Whedon and Nathan Fillion are involved. And he was sort of talking about how, Arrested Development is coming back after 10 years via Netflix, and maybe Firefly could do the same. And it's really cool. I think it's really interesting to see how fandom is changing in that way, that, you know, the persistent interest of this group of brown coat fans can keep the interest going, so potentially it could come back one day.
Yeah, and as you pointed out in the article here, with this conversation at Comic-Con, they were doing a 10th anniversary panel, and didn't the episodes re-air on Sci-Fi?
Yes, they had a marathon, I think.
Yeah. So it's been in the spotlight lately, even though it's been a while.
Hmm.
I mean, that would
and
be
obviously,
very cool.
Obviously, Joss Whedon is going to be tied up with Avengers 2 and with S.H.I.E.L.D. now, which, oh, I'm so excited for S.H.I.E.L.D. But it's just after that, 10 years down the line,
2017.
Who knows? Exactly. There yeah. you go. But yeah, no, it was just fun to hear from him. He also, to Jimmy, one of our Hyperbole writers, to his very great sadness, he also shut down rumors that he would be playing Ant-Man, which is another superhero movie, which was sad. But I just couldn't be too sad about it because I was on the phone with Alan Tudyk, and and it was fun. And I should give a plug here as well. I got some audio that I hopefully will be able to share with everybody that is going to feature in something cool that we're going to be doing on Hyperbole podcast-wise. Tariq is involved with this as well.
It's going to be amazing.
It's going to be so cool. It's going to be all about Firefly. And it is.
It's
because we know that Firefly has such a big fan base, and we know that people still love going back to watch the show and maybe experience it for the first time. So this may or may not be what we're doing.
Yeah.
Stay tuned. Alan Tudyk will not be cryptic on this podcast, though. So. Before people get their hopes up.
Well, it was a good interview, and good job on that.
So fun.
Got picked up by the Huffington Post, and of course, everybody wants Firefly. I've never seen it, but I want Firefly back. I mean, everybody else does, so why not?
Yeah, just supporting us.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Andrew, I feel like you and I need to just watch a bunch of stuff when I move down there.
Well, we move down, we'll have movie nights or TV show notes. Selena and Josh can dictate everything because we obviously have no clue what we
should
be watching.
Screen share and do it together and record it.
Well, you know, Alan was also in A Knight's Tale with Heath Ledger. He was great in that. I don't know if you guys ever saw that.
No.
He was.
First two movies, I think.
That's the same director who directed him in 42, actually.
Oh, yeah.
So it's going to be great to see that. For baseball fans, I think that's going to be really big. I'm bringing you that part of the interview as soon as possible. That's going to be really, really great.
Nice.
Yeah, because that was a neat trailer for 42.
When does that come out? I haven't...
April? Middle of April, I think.
So that's it for the Hot on Hypeable segment. We're going to be talking about more news a little bit later because there's some other things to discuss. Some Vampire Diaries news, some Hobbit news, some Catching Fire news. National Love Your Robot Day was just the other day.
Yay!
some other stuff as well. But first, let's talk about Hypeable's battleships. This was, Tariq had this great idea. When did you start that? Last September-ish?
Yeah, September.
And it focused on current television shows and finding the best ship as voted on by fans. And we narrowed it down to the favorite ship in each fandom, and then we set the fandoms up against each other. And we recently kicked off a new battleships tournament. This one features, as we're calling it, classic television. And by that, we mean television shows that are no longer on the air. Some people are like, oh, this show's classic TV. Like, well, it's just the name of it. It doesn't necessarily mean it's classic in your opinion. But okay, whatever. So right now, we're trying to find the best ship in each of these fandoms. And can you tell us a little bit?
That means relationship, by the way, to everybody not initiated.
Right.
Yes, I don't know if there are any people who don't know what a ship is right now, but a ship is basically a relationship, and it doesn't have to be a romantic relationship. It could be like a bro-ship, kind of.
A bromance.
Bromance, that's what it is. Yeah, exactly. But it's really interesting because we're bringing all these TV shows that people haven't probably thought about in a while, unless they're like diehard fans. And so it's actually really tough thinking of all the past relationships that have happened on these shows. Mm-hmm. Like Pushing Daisies was a great show. I feel like it's almost like Firefly, but not as powerful as a fan base because people are so amazed that it got canceled. It was only canceled because of the writer's strike at the time. And so people are like going head over heels because they get to pick Ned and Chuck, which were the two main characters. It was an amazing ship. And so we have them fighting against people who like have been in a relationship for years, like friends. And so it's going to be really interesting to see if the old television shows will have fandoms that come back to, like, clamor for these this position, or if like Lost and Friends will, you know, overpower them in the end. Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
No, I think it'd be interesting to see, like you said, who will come back, and people have to, you know, when they grew up with these shows, I'm sure they have love for the characters, or they did then, you know, and then they'll be reminded of them now.
And that's the great thing about shipping, isn't it? That it's really, you can't, in my opinion, because shippers always get such a bad rep, so I am absolutely in love with the fact that Hyperbole is celebrating shipping so much, because in my opinion, you can't watch a TV show without caring about the characters and without caring about how the characters interact with one another, whether that's romance or bromance or the female version of bromance, so you have to see that these relationships matter when you're watching shows. And I think it's just, you can be a shipper and also be a like serious fan, if you will. So mm-hmm. I like it. I love it. I'm all about this.
I feel like you ship even if you don't know you ship. Even if you're just like a casual watcher, like you're shipping something.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty clear.
Yeah.
I wanted Zach and Kelly to get together on, Save the Bell. everybody remembers
yes.
Zach and Kelly. They could never be together.
So the fandoms that are competing right now are Friends, Lizzie McGuire, Buffy, Firefly, Boy Meets World, Gilmore Girls, Lost, Chuck, Torchwood, Pushing Daisies, Smallville, House, Heroes, Charmed, Scrubs, and Angel. Two Joss Whedon shows, by the way.
Three Joss Whedon shows.
Three, yeah.
Angel, too.
Angel, yeah.
Buffy, Firefly.
Right, of course.
And just some numbers on last time. We had 190,000 votes during the fellowships.
Grand total? Yeah, so this was just a great idea. I mean, I know... I know I was hating on Prez earlier. So now let's hate on MTV. They do, what do they call it? They do a movie tournament called, the Rumble or something. But it's boring. You're just voting for a movie. Like, that's not, I mean, I guess you can get passionate about that. But this is a much more original, exciting idea. Because people get really passionate about relationships within television and film.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. You kind of split up the fandoms. Like, even if you loved one show, you could love one, you know, one pair. So it kind of splits up the fandoms. And
exactly.
I mean, not negative, have them in fights, but, you know, they kind of pit each other against each other, despite being within the same fandom.
Yeah, people will get offended when you, like, say you don't like a movie, but as soon as you say you don't like a ship, people are like, oh, no, you didn't.
It's very intense. People get very passionate.
Yes.
And I think people were more positive in our ship last time than I've seen on other sites. So it was good. More positive.
I have a little breaking news. I paused because I was looking at. Twitter now lets you change your default language to lolcat. Literally.
What?
Yeah. It's in beta. I'm thinking we need
to
go.
That's like Facebook doing pirates.
I'm thinking we need to go through celebrity Twitters after changing to lolcat and see what they look like.
New segment.
Oh, that would be amazing. Yeah. It would be just like going to gizoogle.com and reading your tweets.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's happening right now with battleships is we're finding the top ship in each of the fandoms. And I know the most recent polls that opened are Gilmore Girls, Lost, Torchwood, Chuck, and Pushing Daisies. What we got to do, little side note, is make a battleship category on the site and then put that all through here so it's easier to find all this stuff. And then we'll have a link somewhere on the site to, you know, so it's easy to find all these articles. Anyway, moving on. You can just search for battleship, by the way, to find these articles. So moving on. We wanted to talk about Divergent a little bit today as well. Now, this is a very popular book-to-film adaptation right now. There are two books out. They are by Veronica Roth. The first one is called Divergent. The second one is called Insurgent. The third one is going to be released this year. Does not have a title yet. Does not have a date. It's supposed to be out in the fall. Selena, you finished reading it recently. Both of the books.
I did.
You really liked it, right?
Yes, I mean, I was originally just going to read the first one, actually, for this podcast. I wanted to be all prepared for once. But no, it's a really well-written book. I think that, I mean, it's Very Hunger Games esque with like the Harry Potter vibe of having factions instead of Hogwarts houses. You know, you have five factions, depending on what your dominant personality trait. And you follow this girl who is just extremely likable. Her name is Triss, and you know, she's sorted into a faction. She has to make her way, but it follows her storyline. It's more romance than I thought it was going to be. Like, the romance plays a really big part in the story, but it's a really good romance. Like, you actually believe it. And then there's also this whole other government conspiracy thing going on underneath it that they become wrapped up in, and it just sucks you in. It's a really, really good book, and I just had to read Insurgent, and then Insurgent ended, and I was like, no, I need the ending. This is terrible.
Yeah. I'm in the middle of book two right now, and I'm enjoying it. Book one, it takes a while to get started for the action. And the action really only picks up towards the end of it, in my opinion. But look, it is a good read. It is a dystopian series. I am looking forward to the third one. I hear book two has a nice cliffhanger, right? Going into book three.
It does. Do you like four? Do you like the romance part?
Yeah, I like Triss and Four. They're two great lead characters. Yeah, I guess that's part of the reason why it's so popular, because people do like that relationship so much.
Although I gotta say that when I was reading Four, and there's this part that's eerily similar to PETA in the last book of The Hunger Games, where I don't want to give any spoilers.
I know what you mean.
But like, it's really weird because like, he doesn't know what he's doing,
Well, to be honest with you, there are, in this particular book, I'm sorry to cut you off, there are moments in the second, or in these books, that are so very clearly inspired by other things. Like, anyone who's played Zelda, I tweeted about this as well, will recognize a part of the second book from that game, and you will know for a fact that she played that game and was inspired by it.
Well, this book was published in April 2011, and of course, The Hunger Games came out in what, like 2008 or 2009. So, look, I'm not going to hate on Divergent. I am looking forward to
it's amazing.
Yeah, but there could definitely be some unintentional
overlap. I mean, that happens, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess.
Subconsciously, even like you'd write something, and you end up writing something similar to something that you love. So it makes sense.
It is a very different dystopian novel, though. It's not like The Hunger Games in the way The Hunger Games is The Hunger Games. So that's good. Summit has owned the rights to this for a couple of years. I remember they were pushing this book, and they let people interview her at Comic-Con 2011.
Yeah.
And I was there, and I went to the Summit thing because I was going for Twilight, and they gave me a copy of the book, and I was like, oh, okay, whatever. But they're really invested in this now. Apparently, the book is outpacing sales of The Hunger Games and Twilight during this part of their book-to-film cycle, if you will.
Wow.
So that's interesting.
Yeah.
Even though it's not showing up in the bestseller list yet, so I don't know what numbers they're looking at. With that said, I mean, Lionsgate has said this is going to be our next thing. They even said, they were like, Hunger Games fans, read this book. You're going to this one.
Yeah.
And I'm excited. We need these every few years. There was Harry Potter, then there was Twilight, now there's The Hunger Games. So what's next? What is going to be the next thing? Granted, Catching Fire still has three more films, so we still got a long way to go with that one.
Yeah, but it's so much weight, though. Well, you know, you have to do something in between.
Yeah, and I mean, Divergent comes out March 2014. That's when it's going to be released in the theaters. As far as casting, we only know Shailene Woodley is going to take the role of Triss. We know that Kate Winslet is in deep negotiations for the role. So, for a role. We don't know what role, but
role.
I think it'll be Jeannie.
Jeannie, yeah.
Are you ready too, Joshua?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't know everybody was up on it.
That's awesome.
You guys are great.
Prepared. No, I was thinking she was going to play the woman from
Amity? Not Amity. Oh my god.
We did a piece on it, I think.
Yes.
What is it? Oh my god.
Do you mean the evil woman?
No, I mean the tattoo woman.
Oh, the tattoo woman. I love her.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, either the tattoo woman or her mom. Yes.
No, I think she would fit the woman from Dauntless. I'm sorry. Tori. I think she would fit that role.
Yeah. there's also talk of her playing Triss's mother, but my vote is for Jeannie. I think she could have that. I think, especially based on the picture that I used in this news article, I could see Kate Winslet having the role of Jeannie. I think she's got the look, she's got the attitude, she's got the physical appearance. And the advantage of having Kate Winslet is that you have a big name actress involved with Divergent. Shane Lean has been in the spotlight a lot lately. She's going to be in The Amazing Spider-Man 2, right?
Yeah, she'll be Mary Jane. Yeah.
So
she is really – it's weird that she is – her career is – yeah, it's weird because my best friend's sister was her roommate. Like,
really?
Yeah, like 10 years ago, 5 years ago.
What kind of secrets can you tell us about her?
I've been
– Tariq's name dropping.
My best friend. I'd be like, talk to your sister. Let me talk to her. So – but it's
so
really
stay
interesting.
Stay tuned, everybody.
It wasn't that long ago that she was just like a normal like actress just trying to make her way in Hollywood, and now she's popping up everywhere.
Yeah, it does seem like she just kind of came out of nowhere, and now she's in two big roles.
Exactly.
As for four, that's another highly anticipated pick. Now, there's been rumors. You guys mentioned Alex Pettifer earlier.
Mm-hmm.
There was this wild rumor. One of these random pop sites was like, Alex Pettifer is playing four, and all of a sudden all these sites suddenly ran with it. These Divergent fan sites, they were like, oh, this is it, they say it's real. And as I wrote in this article, it was the name of the site was a Candyland worthy name. It was like Pop Scope or Scape or Pop Wonderland, whatever.
Pop Crush.
Yeah, something like that.
Pop Sugar.
Anyway, one of these.
Pop Sugar?
Yeah.
Why are there so many of these that we know?
I know. It's so how to create an entertainment site. Take the word pop.
Poppable.
Take the word sugar or something else sultry and sweet. Combine them into a compound word. Then you have your site. Anyway, but that doesn't seem to be the case, at least not yet, even though he was one of the people who auditioned for the role. Other people who have said... they have auditioned. Well, they didn't say it, but it leaked. They were Jeremy Irvine and Lucas Till, amongst a couple of others as well. So they don't know. They don't know yet.
I really like what Shailene said about trying to find someone who has this manly quality to them.
Yeah.
Like they don't want to get this feminine guy.
Yeah, she said, no feminine, please, or something like
that.
Yeah, exactly.
It was borderline mean. And I have the quote here. It says, the thing about four is that he has to be a man. No feminine actors, please. You cannot walk in that room in pretty little boots and pretend you're a man. I'm sorry. You need to walk in there. You need to not have muscles that look good and not actually work.
He's going to be a good Triss.
There have been a few guys that have this power about them. It's a natural masculine power that some people have and some people don't. There's nothing good or bad or wrong or right about it. This character needs to be extremely masculine, and his eyes need to scream vulnerability and sensitivity. It's really hard to find in a dude, especially a dude who can act. So, as you can see, she's very invested in this audition process.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I like that she's vocal about it. You know, usually don't see someone who's already cast trying to like stir up things in their own film.
Right.
Exactly.
She seems fed up. Like she's sick of searching for people.
Maybe they keep making her audition with terrible actors.
Right. I'm done with these.
It's like, why trash. Robert Pattinson? Kick him out.
Pattinson. Did you say Patterson?
How dare you? That was a mic miss.
How dare you? Okay, so let's talk about a little more news. The Vampire Diaries spinoff, The Originals. Selena, tell us about this show. Why is this so exciting? Oh, I know Tariq watches the show as well. So,
well, this is really exciting because basically The Vampire Diaries, I mean, we do a podcast of The Vampire Diaries, blog Vampire Hive, and where we talk a lot about this, actually. The Vampire Diaries is just a really, really popular show. It's one of those shows that just has a huge online following, and the idea of this having a spinoff at all, I think, just makes people think, more Vampire Diaries, you know? And it takes the main villain right now and basically is trying to pull an Angel from Buffy and spinning off the bad guy into his own show where he's going to be the lead character, where potentially this is Klaus, played by Joseph Morgan, who is also a fan favorite. They're taking another actress who was on The Secret Circle, which got canceled, but everyone was really upset. And I think it's just Vampire Diaries fans just see this as a way to expand the universe. You know, I think it's, yeah. Do you have anything to add, Tariq?
No, I think it's just, it's amazing. And this, it's an interesting casting choice.
Yeah.
Casting choice. Because I thought he was going to be like French or something because his name is Marcel.
Oh, you're talking about the particular casting.
Yeah.
You meant Klaus.
Oh, because that's the news piece. That was in the thing.
Sorry.
Okay. Okay. I will revert that. Okay. Let's edit that bit out.
It's good to know
anyway.
That he doesn't listen to what I'm saying.
Right? I'm really excited for it because it's going to be really interesting with Klaus. Klaus is really a one-sided villain at this point, which is the main villain in Vampire Diaries. And I think anytime you have an opportunity to go deeper into a character for any show or any movie, it really gives the opportunity to get a lot more fans out of it. Because I don't know what I'm saying, but it's just going to be awesome.
But it's true. And Elijah is going to be on there as well, Daniel Gillies. It's basically these originals that we love and that are going to be given a chance to breathe in their own show, which is amazing.
The Vampire Diaries does really well in the ratings right now, right?
Yes.
So this is cool. I'm excited for you guys when I saw that news.
Thank you.
It's a cool name, too, The Originals. It's pretty neat.
It's all right.
Oh.
I like it.
Never mind, then. Let's talk some Hobbit news. Of course, The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey was the first of three films by Peter Jackson, adapting J.R.R. Tolkien's book, The Hobbit. And it was in theaters in December, and we have DVD Blu-ray news now. And here's the problem with it.
I'm disappointed.
Yeah. Why do you think this is disappointing, Josh?
Well, no, I mean, I read your article. Because of the process that Peter Jackson did where he allowed fans to see what they were doing, you know, throughout the year and a half or whatever it took to film, I think we're kind of being, you know, we're losing a little bit of these extra features when the DVD comes out because we've already seen a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff. Now, having said that, I've seen whenever he did The Lord of the Rings, the behind-the-scenes stuff was very extensive, and I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it's very well made. So mm-hmm. I can't doubt him until I see it, but I, like you, felt like he kind of gave away his, you know, the best behind-the-scenes features as he was releasing them on Facebook, I think.
Right, so aren't these just going to be those that he released on Facebook and YouTube? Aren't they just going to be re-released on the DVD Blu-ray?
It may be, but from his The Lord of the Rings extended editions, they were like 4 hours of new behind-the-scenes footage. And while those Facebook features were like, what, an hour sometimes, he released, you know, I don't know, a few of them. And I think there'll be more on the disc. I definitely think it'll be worth buying, but I agree with you that some of it's some of the magic's a little bit gone because we've already seen a lot of it.
And then the other issue is that everybody knows there's going to be an extended edition out before the holidays.
Exactly.
And Warner Brothers says so in the press release. So any big Hobbit fans are just going to be like, oh, well, I'll just wait for the extended edition. Or, oh, I'll just wait for all three together in like 4 or 5 years from now.
Yeah.
Or 3 years from now. It's hard to justify purchasing this. Now, here's the one unique, cool advantage if you're a big fan. It's that there is going to be Peter Jackson will be hosting a live first look at The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug. That's the second film coming out later this year. On Sunday, March 24th at 3 p.m. Now, what you have to do is you have to buy this Blu-ray, and then you have to somehow you're going to be able to watch it with Peter Jackson live using the Blu-ray that will somehow connect to the live stream.
Okay. That's like what we do on Hypeable.
What do you mean?
Like we do live streamings and stuff.
Tariq's.
Or watchings.
The live watches.
The live watches that we do on DVD releases.
Oh, right. Yeah.
This seems like a terrible idea, though. It's like, I have a feeling that even the people that buy it won't be able to get their like Blu-ray players to connect to whatever he's doing. Because it's like a live release. You know what I mean? It should have just been included on the Blu-ray or, you know.
Yeah. DVD. I mean, I guess the one reason that it wouldn't be included is, the material's not ready yet, which would make sense. Now, here's the good news. A edited version of whatever is broadcast live will be available online afterwards.
Oh, okay.
It will. I see here it says access to the live event will be limited to holders of an ultraviolet code. So maybe you can watch online. Because if you have the ultraviolet, well, who knows? They weren't very clear about that. The way I was comparing it to was when Half-Blood Prince came out. You could do there was a live commentary with Dan Radcliffe and producer David Barron.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be David Yates, but he was sick. And you had to have the Blu-ray in your player, and then you turned on this thing, and then you could watch the film live. And it was cool because they would talk about the movie as you're watching. So I'm equating it to that in terms of how that technology is going to work.
Did that work well?
Yeah, it worked great. Yeah, it was neat. I enjoyed it. They didn't divulge as much as I was hoping. They kind of were talking about anything but what was happening on the screen during that time.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was cool. Let's talk some Catching Fire news. People know we used to do a Hunger Games chat, a podcast called Hunger Games Chat, and we closed it because we have this now. And now we have some news here about Catching Fire. It's been slow. There's been some stills released in recent weeks. But in a new interview, director Francis Lawrence talked about choosing a Finnick and developing Haymitch's post-traumatic stress disorder. I thought this was interesting because we didn't really get to learn about Haymitch much in terms of his background during the Hunger Games, but now we're going to have this background info during Catching Fire. He said... In this interview, Francis Lawrence, the director, one of the things I really like about this book is you start to see kind of why Haymitch is the way he is, why people are the way they are. So I did a fair amount of work in terms of that, in terms of understanding post-traumatic stress disorder and how to work with somebody with post-traumatic stress. Also, we started messing around a lot with some real humanity in Haymitch because he can be quite cynical and sarcastic at times. But I think there's a more human side to him in this one as well.
That's good news, because Haymitch is such a fan favorite character,
mm-hmm.
And there's so much depth to him that the books don't really explore. So if he actually tries to bring that across in the film, I think that'll be really good.
Julie, a hypeable reader, said, "I have so much more faith in Lawrence after these comments. Dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder is such a crucial point for Katniss, Peeta, and Haymitch. So excited to see what he does with Catching Fire."
Well, we see him doing a lot of drinking and whatnot in the first film, right?
Yeah, but
yeah.
I guess,
so I mean, there's some undertones, I guess, of
right.
his disorder.
Those who haven't read it probably may not just think much about it.
Yeah,
at least not in terms of PTSD, but they just think he's a drunk fool. How about National Love Your Robot Day? Did anybody know this was coming up?
What is
up?
That even?
I was too busy with National Free Pancake Day here.
Wow.
Yes.
I missed that.
Yeah.
There was also Free Yogurt Day in some places around here. That was exciting. Wow. Anyway, in this list developed by Karen, one of the great hypeable writers and editors, she did a list of the top 10 and some great explanations on why these are our favorite robots. We have Sunny from iRobot. We have, now this one, this one's got to be number one, right? Wally, in my opinion, he's number one.
Yeah.
He's pretty awesome.
I agree.
Bumblebee from Transformers. Astro Boy from Astro Boy. K-9 from Doctor Who.
Oh.
That's pretty good, too.
That's an awesome one.
Iron Giant from the movie with the same name. Rosie the Maid from the Jetsons. She's a great one.
Yeah, I thought she was good.
R2-D2, of course, from Star Wars.
Yes. Aw. I love robot.
Karen, a fun fact about this. Karen was like, "So how does R2-D2 talk to people?" And I was like, "He just beeps." So she put best line random beeps under his best line.
Rodney Copperbottom from Robots. And then finally, number 5 from Short Circuit. I have a favorite robot from a video game, The Sims. Servo. I don't know if any of you play The Sims, but Servo from the original Sims games was the greatest robot. Nobody has.
I've
apparently.
never played
Sims.
Do you guys have any other robot picks? That you
Despite you
play?
Owning it, I've never played.
Have you guys ever any other favorite robot picks?
I like Wall-E too. I'm going to second that one.
Yeah,
I like Bumblebee. Whenever the first Transformers film came out, I was pretty impressed with it. I liked how they used a lot of like Tom Hanks in his voice. You know, I thought it was in a lot of his lines from his movies.
Yeah,
it was always
fun. Bumblebee's awesome.
Yeah.
There was also in the comments of this article, there was also Bender from Futurama.
Oh yeah.
Green Lantern.
Oh, that's awesome.
Aya from Green Lantern, the animated series.
I want to say the name. I don't remember her name, but she was in Flubber, the robot in Flubber.
Oh yeah.
Let me see.
Well, yeah, Flubber robot. Yeah, she was one of my favorites. I love that movie as well.
She was like sassy and like she had a crush on him. And it was just perfect.
Weebo.
Yes.
So happy National Love Your Robot Day. That's the type of articles we like doing on those celebratory days.
Yeah.
Selena, you're considering talking about Community on today's episode.
Well, only if anyone's seen it and if we want to, but we don't have to.
Yeah, you know, none of us have, but I know since the creator and showrunner, Dan Harmon, was let go from NBC, it apparently has changed very much.
Yeah, see, because I really want to talk about it, but I haven't seen the episode yet, but I love Community, and I've wanted to see how it's going to be going on without Dan Harmon, but it would make for a really bad podcast conversation if none of us have seen it, so.
Yeah, well, apparently, I was reading something, I think, in the New York Times. They were saying that the first two episodes are so bad because it's missing that classic comedy that you got in the first three seasons.
They parodied Hunger Games, though, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that a big deal, though? I mean...
No.
I mean, I guess it grabs attention, but it doesn't really do much else. Here's the article from the New York Times. One of the many reasons to watch the first three seasons of Community, the fiercely quirky and unapologetically smart NBC sitcom, was that you actually had to watch it. Every offhand remark, every reaction shot, every bit of physical business communicated something, usually something funny. More than any other show in primetime, it demanded that you pay attention. The sad part about season four is that it makes no such claim on your concentration. Send a few emails, look at the television, order a pizza, look back at the TV. You won't miss anything important because there's nothing important to miss. So a scathing review.
That's depressing.
From the New York Times.
That is sad.
Yeah. And this is the final season, right? So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just thinking we don't have to try.
Well, we do have a very interesting viral article for Community coming out soon, so
people
should be looking for that.
Well, who's writing it? Because maybe we should have them on the next episode.
It's not exactly written. Maybe in another format.
Ooh!
Oh!
Man, you are something else, Josh. Okay, so now we'll move on to another segment here on the show we're going to be doing every episode. It's called Hype-Worthy. And this is just, quite simply, just where we recommend something that's hype-worthy. Tariq, you go first. What is hype-worthy? It could be a book, a television show, a movie, a video game.
Now, the hype on this has somewhat died down since it first came out, but I'm going to recommend The Night Circus because it is just a phenomenal book. It's one of my favorites. It's the story about these two magicians who were raised to battle each other until the death with magic, except they don't know who they're battling. The arena is a circus, and they have to out-magic the other magician by creating a more marvelous circus tent. And the imagery is beautiful. And naturally, being this book that it is, they fall in love. And they don't realize that they fall in love with their opponent until the very end. And it's just great because it's set in the 1800s. And I love period pieces. And so period piece plus magic plus amazing imagery is it's just awesome.
Yeah, I hear about that a lot. I actually read part of it and then I stopped. I'm embarrassed to say. But I do want to get back to it, especially now that you just recommended it. I'll have to remember to get back into that once I'm done with Insurgent. How about you, Selena?
Well, I'm going to follow Tariq's book recommendations here. I've been on a bit of a young adult kick recently. I figured it's time to catch up with some of the stuff that's being hyped up right now. And the book that I just finished reading was The Selected by Kira Cass. This is going to hopefully, this year, hopefully it's going to be a new pilot on the CW. It was actually scheduled to be adapted last year, but then it got scrapped, which I'm very disappointed by, because William Moseley from Narnia was pegged to play the prince, who is one of the lead characters, and he would have been 100% perfect. This was like dream casting, and it fell through, and I'm really disappointed. But anyway, the book is very, very good. It's one of those books that, for me, I mean, I liked Divergent. I liked loads of books that I've been reading recently, but the Selected was a book that it's got its moments, and it's got its sort of not moments, but it's just, it keeps you going. You want to keep reading this book. It's one of those that you just swallow it, and you can't put it down. It's a love story. It's about this dystopian future where a prince has to find his wife, and so I think 30-something girls from around the country, this post-apocalyptic risen up again America, are chosen to compete for his hand. And I mean, it's what it says in the tin, but I'm the kind of person who enjoys stuff like that. Like, I watch Once Upon a Time. it appealed to me in some strange way. And the romance is again, really believable. And it's just, it's a really just a great read that'll put you in a really good mood. And I can't believe that the second book isn't out yet, because I thought it was, and I was so disappointed when I learned that it wasn't.
Now, there have been Hunger Games comparisons, correct? At least that's what some people in the media want to do to bring more attention to it. But would you classify it as that? Like, I mean, it's not, they're not killing each other, but it's that kind of...
See, exactly. I would classify it as a very, very fluffy version of the Hunger Games. Like, if the Hunger Games didn't have death, this is what it would be. It really is. And in a way, that's a good thing, because the Hunger Games, I mean, one of the reasons that's such a strong book is because they're faced with these huge things of actually life or death. Here, it's just the competition. It's just the who's going to fall in love bit, you know. But there is an undercurrent of something more serious going on in the kingdom, but it's very vanilla. No, that's the wrong phrase, but you know what I mean? Like, it's non-threatening. Mm-hmm. It's just you can relax while you read it. You don't have to read it with your heart in your throat wondering who's going to, you know, get an arrow through the throat.
It's a beach read.
I have a question. I'm reading a lot of dystopian novels with main girl leads, though. Is it, like, different in that sense, where, like, you can, like, because I'm having trouble, I'm reading Darkest Minds right now, and it's very similar to Divergent. So, did you have trouble differentiating Divergent with the Selection, or is it, like, pretty, like, unique in those
well,
terms?
It's, I'm not sure what it is about the Selection that I like so much. Like, I wish I could tell you, but I really don't. But I think the way I compare it to Divergent is that technically the Divergent is a better book, I would say. I mean, technically the writing is tighter, but as far as just pure enjoyment value, I enjoy the Selection more. And it might be because, you know, in stories like Divergent and Hunger Games, the main characters are great, but they're almost unrelatable because they're so extreme. Whereas this girl, she's more realistic, so it's easier to identify with her. Mm-hmm. And it's easier to identify with her problems, even though they aren't as life and death as they might have been in those other books, which is both a good and a bad thing, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Now you make me really excited about it. So I think.
Oh, I hope everybody should check it out. I don't know how well I'm selling it, but I really do. I really did love reading it. I just had a blast. You know, like when you read a book and you actually enjoy reading the book.
Yeah, no, that's always a great feeling. Josh, what is your pick? Hype-worthy. What is hype-worthy in your mind this episode?
Well, mine's somewhat of a cop-out. It's a film, but since the Oscars are coming up on the 24th, I believe, I saw Zero Dark Thirty. And I've heard a lot of people kind of avoiding it because of the source material and the torture scenes and whatnot. But I thought it was one of the best films that I've seen in quite a few years. And really, Jessica Chastain is just blowing up. I think in film right now, I think she's going to be literally one of the best actors, not just actresses, but actors, for the next, you know, decade, because she is just so great. And, you know, she plays a CIA operative named Maya. And basically she, you know, you guys may know the story, but she hunts Osama bin Laden for 10 years. And she is essentially the person who found the compound, which they end up, you know, raiding and taking Osama bin Laden. And I just felt like a lot of people are avoiding this. A lot of people I know were kind of like, you know, I know the story, or I don't feel like it's, you know, my sort of thing. But it was one of the best films I've seen in a long time, and I see a lot of films. So I think with the Oscars coming up, you know, I suspect she may have an Oscar coming her way.
Yeah, so you think for what, Best Director or Best Picture?
I don't know. I think it's hard to know. I know Catherine didn't get the Oscar for Hurt Locker. She may get it for this because it's just so well made, you know, and having a female lead where you, you know, truly believe, in, especially in a CIA, you know, sort of spot where it's usually a male dominated field. She does such a great job. That part is just so well written. And I was just glued to my seat literally the entire time. And rarely does that happen. You know, I'm rarely where I'm just enjoying something so much that I can't, you know, stop. So I just wanted to, in case people were avoiding it due to the source material, you know, just throw that away and go see it before the Oscars come up because it's just great.
Cool. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. Have either you, Selena or Tariq?
It's not out here dark? Like every single other
really? Movie. No, wow. I have not.
Yeah, I haven't either. I heard it was really like long and scary and, you know, two things I hate.
That's what I've heard. A lot of people seem to be avoiding it. I just wanted to kind of throw it out there because yeah. I thought it was so great. And Jessica Chastain, I mean, she's just – I know she was – you know, she's been nominated before and she's doing great in other films. But she is so good in this. I think that anybody would be impressed.
See, I'll regret seeing it if it ends up winning a bunch of Oscars because I want Argo to win because I've seen Argo.
Yeah, Argo was great. Yeah.
If Zero Dark, I'm going to be pissed like it was when Slumdog Millionaire won everything because it was winning every award left and right and I hadn't seen it. And I was like, what am I watching this for? I'm watching something win that I don't even know anything about. It's disappointing. I'm very selfish.
Yeah.
So I'm probably going to go see Zero Dark just in case it ends up winning. So that way I can tweet like, oh, yes, yeah. I agree. I agree with the Academy. It deserved that award.
Well, I just saw Argo because it re-released in my theater last week. And I would say I thought Zero Dark Thirty was better than Argo, despite Argo being incredible. So if that helps you go, I'd definitely check it out.
I guess. Well, I hear it's like a movie version of Homeland, and I love that show. So
you know what? It does have – I love Homeland, yeah. But Jessica Chastain is incredible. I mean, I rarely, you know, there's only a few female actresses where I'm like, wow, she's amazing. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's only because there's limited roles for females in terms of these sort of roles, you know, and or for even main cast. But she was just perfect, and I think she's going to be a big deal. Not that she isn't already, but I think she's going to be a huge deal in the next few years.
Nice. Cool. And my pick of the week is The Perks of Being a Wallflower on DVD Blu-ray. It comes out, like we mentioned earlier, this week. I did a review of the DVD Blu-ray. It comes with two commentary tracks. One is just Stephen Chbosky. The other one is Stephen Chbosky and the cast. And they're both really good, really insightful. Then there are a ton of deleted scenes. And then on top of that, additional footage, just raw footage called dailies. And this footage, including a shot of Emma going through the tunnel as Sam, is seeing her do that whole scene, was really fantastic. And that, too, has commentary from Stephen Chbosky. So if you love the book or film, highly recommend that. The DVD and Blu-ray have the same exact special features, so you don't have to worry about getting the DVD and missing out on special features that are available on the Blu-ray. And again, that's available February 12th. And you can also go to Hypeable for the review.
This movie already.
Sorry?
I still haven't. I just really want to see this movie already.
Yeah, it didn't come to my theater, so I'd love to see it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
it didn't come to my country.
It's a shame. I mean, I almost think this could have been Oscar worthy, at least some nominations. Or
that's
Golden
what
Globes.
I heard.
I mean, there were some really great performances. I don't know what happened. Maybe somebody doesn't know how to get their films in with the nominating committees.
Logan Lerman was just fantastic in that movie.
He really was. Yep.
Yeah, and it's interesting because as I was searching Amazon with Kristen, who was helping me schedule the live watch party that we have planned for the 16th, because we're all going to watch it on hypeable.com. We're going to play it on our DVDs, and we're going to have a chat room where we can talk about it, so that should be fun. But we were looking for the dates because we want to make sure that it had enough release dates worldwide, and it seems like worldwide, it's actually releasing around the same time, like either the 11th or the 12th.
Hmm.
So okay, it's interesting. So hopefully, Selena, you can grab it in like a few days and watch it.
Yeah.
The 11th, I'll be able to watch it. I'm very excited.
February 16th, we'll be hosting a watch party. Tariq's going to be leading that. I'm sure some of us will be involved in the chat. And we're all going to hit play at the same time and talk about the movie as we all watch from the comfort of our own homes.
Yeah, I'll join. It looks good.
Yeah, it is good. Everybody bring the tissues.
I just want to say it because Emma Watson's in it. It's been a while.
It's been a while. She's awesome.
You know, the last Harry Potter was a year and a half ago.
Yeah, it's like forever ago for Emma Watson fans.
Yeah.
What was I going to say about that? Oh, she plays Sam, and really great performance in there.
Nina Dobrev is in it as well, Vampire Diaries Connection.
Vampire Diaries, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a really great deleted scene with her in it as well. A plot from the book that was cut. It's, well, I guess I won't spoil it for people who aren't up on it, but great deleted scene there as well. Okay, so real quickly, finally, on each of these episodes, we want to mention things that are coming up in the next 2 weeks before our next episode. Justin Bieber will be hosting Saturday Night Live this Saturday. Didn't he host once before? Maybe not.
I don't remember him ever hosting.
You're asking the wrong people.
I could be wrong.
Yeah,
I know he's appeared. He has appeared. I don't think he's hosted before. I could be wrong on that. In theaters now, Identity Thief. I reviewed the movie, and honestly, it's not that good. I was expecting a better performance from Melissa McCarthy. She really just couldn't carry a lead role, which was disappointing. And Josh, there's a movie coming out called Side Effects. Is that out today? Is that out Friday, February 8th? So it's already out?
Yes.
Okay.
Came out today. It's directed by Steven Soderbergh. And supposedly it was his final film, but he released that he was actually working on another film with Michael Douglas that will be coming out before he retires, apparently. I think he's just taking a break, essentially. But Side Effects, starring Rooney Mara, Channing Tatum, Jude Law, and Catherine Zeta-Jones. A lot of rave reviews about this. They're calling it a pharmaceutical thriller. Basically, it's about antidepressants and the pharmaceutical companies, and Rooney Mara plays a depressed wife. And basically, there's a lot of shocking twists and apparently an explosive ending. So I think it looks great. And I've heard Jeremy, our reviewer, said it's great. So I'm looking forward to it.
Cool. And finally, out this Wednesday, Valentine's Day. No, this Thursday, Valentine's Day, is Beautiful Creatures. It's a book-to-film adaptation. The book of the same name was by Cami Garcia and Margaret Stull. And they WB timed it specifically for Valentine's Day because it's a romance.
I'm pretty sure the book Beautiful Creatures is going to be the next book that Hypeable covers on its book club as well.
Oh, cool.
So if you want to read that, join us for the book club on the forums.
Join us.
Random plug.
Here's a review on their website from the School Library Journal about the book. It says, "Give this to fans of Stephanie Meyer's Twilight or HBO's True Blood series, and they will devour all 600-plus pages of this teen gothic romance." So if that's the type of thing you're into, it may be the book for you or the film. I think we'll have a review of that movie coming out in the next few days on Hypeable as well, because I know Jen, who handles our book section, saw it. So we'll see what happens there. Anyway,
yeah, I think she also had a on-set review there.
Did she? Was it Beautiful Creatures?
Maybe not.
No, it wasn't Beautiful Creatures. It was, I know what you're thinking about, Cassandra Clare's book.
Probably the same, like, similar thing.
Yeah, it is a similar thing. Immortal Instruments, that's what
Immortal
it is.
Immortal Instruments, that's it, yep.
Yeah, that'll be out later this year. So that is the first episode of Hype. I think that went well, guys, don't you agree?
Yep.
Yeah.
I think so.
We'll trash it after we record, don't worry. And, we will, like I said, we're going to be doing this show for now every other week, so twice a month. If you have any feedback about today's episode, if you tell us what you liked, what you didn't like, respond to anything we talked about, go into the episode announcing this post on Hypeable, hit the comments, let us know what you think. We may read your feedback on the next episode. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Check out Hypeable for all the news about all the fans we talked about today and a whole lot more. And we'll see you next time for episode 2 of Hype. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Selena Wilkin.
I'm Tarik Rizal.
And I'm Josh Neely.
Don't worry, we'll get that order down in no time flat.
I just took the second one.
All right, we'll see everybody next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.